Welcome and thank you for listening to today's episode of the Auburn Daily Podcast and the show on YouTube. This is the post-LSU game edition, not the happiest edition we've ever had. I want to thank Mike G for joining us today. You may have heard me and Mike on the Auburn Express Power by the War before as Mike and Memes. This is the remix, Memes and Mike, with me hosting, but same great content and great show. And yes, Mike G did invent the brick background. I just stole it from him. We are not together, despite how this video looks. It was like when two people wear the same thing at a party, and you're like, I didn't know you were wearing that.
Many things on Amazon look the same. Memes. Mm-hmm. Many things on Amazon.
Yeah, just total coincidence. But it's a sick background. But yeah, so we that's going to be our little. It's going to be our little joke. Maybe it's embarrassing. I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it. But anyway, Auburn, LSU, Mike G. I'm at a loss. I'm going to let you take it right now. Auburn, LSU.
Yeah, like you and I, we do a little segment over on the War Report called Boss It, Toss It, Loss It. I had this one in the loss column firmly. It belonged there based on what we saw. So, you know, if you remember our predictions before this one, I initially called this one, I think, like 45-17. Auburn did 1 point better than that. And LSU did a little better than I thought they would as well, too, but only by 3 points. So, I mean, when you look at how this one ended, in terms of scoring, this is about what I expected. I think it's about what you expected as well, too.
Yep.
An offense that has struggled to move the ball almost all season continued to struggle to move the ball on the road in one of the most raucous environments in all of college football. So it was disappointing. It felt like they came out a little flat. Also, coming off a bye week, this performance was very disappointing, Memes. I just don't know how you prepare for 2 weeks, and that is what you see. It looked disjointed. It did not look – there was no flow. There's still no offensive identity to this team. And the one thing that they did do well, they weren't able to do, and that's run the ball. I'm not sure. LSU is the bottom of the league in rush defense. They're 13th. They came into the game 13th in the league in pass defense. 13th in the league in scoring. And last in the league in total yards allowed. Not being able to move the ball on this defense for Auburn is very disappointing. Hugh Freeze and their staff, they've got some work to do.
Yeah, and that was kind of the big narrative of this game. And so our episode that we did last Friday with Andrew Stefaniak joining us, that was what can fans realistically expect for this game? And I think there was a lot of people, not trying to call anybody out, but it was just maybe might have been a little too much booging going on. I think the bye week, I think there was a mix of this narrative of how bad LSU's defense was, how close Auburn played Georgia. I think a lot of people started kind of puffing their chest out a little bit, and they started to believe. And you know, do you believe, or do you have to acknowledge, okay, it's a rebuilding year? Kind of where where do you take it on that? And it's a rivalry game. Of course, you always want to play them close. You want to win them. You don't ever want them to be 30 points. And that's what this one was. My score prediction on Zach's was, I think, 13-34. I was pretty set on that 13 number for Auburn. I was close. And then I think on your show last week, I think I said 13. That was like 35-42 range. And so, long story short, you're closer than I was. But this is what was to be expected. And I honestly thought that they were going to try to establish the pass early on, which they did. I pretty much thought LSU was going to be playing video games with their offense, which they did. And this isn't a, oh, look how right I was, look how wrong you were, or anything like that for anybody who's listening. But it was just, there were a lot of indicators how this game would play out, and they kind of ended up playing out that way.
Yeah, sure. The thing that we're going to get into, and the thing that all fans want to know is what is going on at quarterback.
So let's get that segue there. And that's what I was going to kind of get into, is the expectation versus, because like I said, we said this, that we both expected this roughly to happen, and things that we were like, all right, maybe that was a little bit better, a little bit worse. And I think that's a great way to start with quarterback. Let's just jump right into that. Better, worse, about the same.
It was worse.
Okay.
It was definitely worse. Now, why was it worse? Well, Payne Thorne had a QBR of 26.7 in this game. That is not good. It was objectively worse on every level than Georgia. It looked worse than Texas A&M. This was one of their worst offensive performances. To not reach the 300 yard mark in total yardage is baffling, right? Again, against one of the worst. They were averaging 335 yards a game coming in. So Auburn underperformed a lot of their season totals coming into this one. If there were ever a game that they were going to get their offense jump-started, this was the one. Right, you are at the halfway point of the season, and they've been giving up yards like crazy all year. So not being able to move the ball in this defense, I think primarily starts with the decision at quarterback, because you mold the game plan around who the primary starter is going to be. They chose Payne Thorne. He has not taken the steps forward that the staff thought he was going to take. I think everybody thought that he would raise the floor in this room. It's lower, memes. It's lower. Now, is that on Thorne? I think some of it is on Thorne, but I put the majority of the blame on this coaching staff, because it's not just Thorne that doesn't look good. It's all of it. And I think they have to own that, because an interim coach in Caddy was able to get more out of this team in the last four games of last year than we've gotten through six games with LSU.
Yeah, I mean, a less talented version. It's saying on the offensive side, a less talented version. And then, I mean, the biggest – deficiency last season compared to this season is they got enough of the right pieces to be competent at offensive line. It's not perfect. Mm-hmm. There's still some struggles, don't get me wrong, but for the most part, that line has been able to stay healthy, and they have performed better to where it's like, all right, they're serviceable. They can do enough to get the rushing game going. They can do enough to give the quarterback time most of the time without just letting him get absolutely obliterated, which for the last few years hadn't necessarily been the case. So, yeah, I mean, the narrative is out there. I mean, Thorne did exactly – I mean, it's kind of been the same story, different week.
Yeah.
And that's where you're going to kind of sit there scratching your head and really – I mean, the fan narrative out there is very much, oh, just pull Thorne. He's not the guy. Put Robbie in, put Holden in, whatever. I think we can both agree that the reality there is a lot more complicated. Just by, and I, the more I thought about this today, and I'm glad I recorded this today, this would be Sunday evening, this will drop Monday, versus doing an instant game reaction to the show, is it seems very much, because I mean, the big confusion is what was up with this erratic swapping in and out of Robbie, and when were they pulling him in these play situations? He was, you know, why are you not feeding the hot hand? And I'm thinking with that is because Hugh Freeze had always talked about the packages. It looks like the playbook for Robbie had just been very, very limited. And I was just sitting there like, are they just the two plays where they would run it? We ran it with Jarquez and then just got nothing out of it. It's 3rd and 9. And then they pull him out, where it was just like, do they not have a 3rd and long play for Robbie? Is there nothing in the repertoire for that?
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's pretty clear that they did not intend for him to throw the ball. I think this is what it comes down to. You're talking about packages. I'm saying, if you right now you have a backup quarterback that you have really no plan for, Payne Thorne goes down, if you ask me, because even in obvious situations where you should let him cook, you're not letting him cook. Right. So what is it going to take for this coaching staff to give this young man a real chance to run this offense entirely? Right now, I mean, what do you have to lose? They're treating, you know, in my eyes, they're treating like this like a throwaway season. That's what you're doing. You're treating like a throwaway system when you have Robbie in and he's driving the ball down the field, and then you pull him out and the drive immediately stalls. Hugh Freeze was questioned on this. Means he was asked, like, you know, hey man, if you're trying to get a quarterback settled in, doesn't the swapping, isn't it kind of, you know what I mean? Doesn't it achieve the opposite for you to getting a quarterback settled in? And he was like, yeah, you're thinking, I just don't understand it. So they're going to have to come up with a plan that makes sense for the rest of the season at quarterback. I think it starts there, and then you can try to figure out what your offensive identity is once you're comfortable what the quarterback can do.
Well, it's one of those deals where you see what happened with A&M. Wegman goes down, and then Johnson comes in, and it was just didn't miss a beat at all. The offense was firing on all cylinders. There was nothing there. And here, there's a massive difference for how it looks with him and with Thorne and Robbie in there. And that's what I'm just kind of thinking, as you kind of said, like, this offense has not been designed to run around Robbie. So it's almost a damned if you do, damned if you don't, because if you take Robbie and just throw him to the wolves, and it's like, all right, well, you've got 4 days of just one team reps to learn the playbook. I mean, you were just setting him up for utmost failure. And then he gets in there, he can't run an offense, because it's just, is it really realistic to expect the guy to just pick everything up in that short amount of time? So there is a very real reality where if he's given the absolute full keys of the thing that has not been predicated and designed around him, it might not work. So while you sit there and just want to think, yeah, give it to Robbie, there could be a lot more at play than just where it is. And it may be one of those things where they're just in too deep, and short of Thorne actually getting hurt, or just legitimately throwing more interceptions than completions, this just may be the reality of how it is. And obviously, everybody thinks that somebody's got an agenda. The general agenda is let the best guy play. And as you mentioned,
winning, yeah.
what we've seen with Thorne is, and then if it's not going to be Thorne, I have a hard time believing that's the best guy. Then I guess the next thing there is, well, next guy up, at least give him a chance. And that's where I think a lot of the frustration is here with folks. And I could maybe include myself in this, is the staff really doing everything they can to give the quarterbacks, the team, who, you know, however you want to look at it, the best chance with personnel? And we don't know.
First and foremost, it starts with choosing the right guy, right? You have to put your best players on the field. And then if you make a mistake, go to the next guy. They do it at every other position. And so, you know, if you look at what happened at Alabama this year, it didn't take Nick Saban a whole season before he was just like, let's just make sure we got the right guy, because it's hard sometimes to evaluate how a QB will react in practice versus a game. Some guys are gamers. You put them out there and they just play. And I think that that's what Robbie has shown so far. He came into this game with only 18 pass attempts on the season. So, you know, he was hurt all last season, and they finally got him in a healthy place. He did some good things. He was given five throws. They counted one as a backwards lateral to Cobb, which he gained 13 yards on. But he had four throws, you know, on the books. He completed three of them. One of them was the longest pass of the game, and it was an absolute dime. Now, I'm not saying Robbie Ashford is the answer moving forward. And for anybody listening to this, this isn't you know, Robbie is better than Peyton. I'm saying the floor is way too low for what we're seeing. So at some point, if you keep telling us as media that we need to do this better, we need to do that better, we need to execute, and you continue to put it, you know, a good portion on the players, either a player can do it or it cannot. You've run businesses, I've run businesses, and we've been managers under people. And you have to know at some point, when you have an underperforming employee, the people that you report to expect you to do something about it. And if you don't, they will do something about you. That's how accountability works. So, you know, he's got to do something about this, whether it is figuring out how to get Thorne on an acceptable plane of play, or trying the next guy, because this same quarterback that he just wouldn't let cook threw for 337 yards in this game last year.
Mm-hmm. Now, last question on quarterback. Do you think we see Peyton, Robbie, or a rotation against Ole Miss this upcoming weekend?
I struggle with this, because conventional wisdom would have suggested that during LSU, after the half, when Robbie moved the ball down the field and you got a field goal, that you just leave him in the rest of the game and see what you have in him. Right. They didn't even do that. And I'm not sure, like, what are you doing? You trying to manage his reps at this point? He was a starter in all the SEC last year. See what he's got for a half. Now, I want to believe they will give him a game to get it together, prepare him as a starter going into the week. But right now, it means I'm telling you, I have no faith in the personnel decisions that this staff is making. This is almost rock bottom. You and I talked about this last night, about the yardage total being on track to be one of the top three worst seasons in the last 23 years offensively. So I'm going to go with Peyton Thorne starts against Ole Miss. That's really unfortunate. It is. But I only have the history of making excuses that we've seen in the press conferences to come to that conclusion that, you know, it's going to be Peyton Thorne and, you know, maybe they'll have a better plan to incorporate Robbie as the starter for a game going into this one if it doesn't work out with Thorne.
Yeah, Justin Lee sent out a stat line on Twitter just now of the just compare, because somebody had asked him basically where is this year's offense comparing to years past. And for those listening, I promise we're not trying to make this a doom and gloom thing. This is just the unfortunate reality of what it is. And we'll try to, you know, we'll try to see sunshine as much as we can, but unfortunately the clouds are thick. So 2023, your yards per game, 266.7 as of right now after LSU. 2012, it was 231, and these were for SEC games only, let me clarify. Mm-hmm. So 235.1 in 2012, 266.1 in 2008. 2003 was 386.9. There were some other stats in this chart that would have made 2003 applicable to this. Then 1998, 285.9. So, yeah, I mean, this is in the points per game of that range was 16, 10, 11, 24, and 15.5, just rounding. So it's there in SEC play against Power Five teams with the years of Auburn football you don't want to be around, unfortunately. And this, and the weird part about this is these numbers, for the most part, have been at coaches' final years at Auburn, not the first. So it's a little bit more of a head scratcher of what was going on here. And I want to kind of spin this on a term that Alan Green had said. And it was, you know, obviously after he let Gus go, the famous quote was, you know, we just didn't feel like we had any hope. And then on this side of the ball, I think, you know, Brian Harsin, that was a farce. And then Hugh Freeze really did inject a lot of that hope and feel good feeling to a lot of people. And now everybody's here saying, oh my gosh, it's as bad as the offense problems. The only thing offensively that's gotten better in a freeze has been the O-line, which has really been a plague since 2018. But everything else is, I mean, it is sliding further back than even, you know, with Harsin's worst woes thus far. So I'm doing a slight pivot from where we were just on the LSU thing, but where do you think the hope lies with this big picture, small picture situation?
Where does the hope lie? Oh, man. Well, it's got to start with the coaching staff figuring something out, right? I think that is it. The narrative of players just have to play better is, I think it's a huge cop-out for this coaching staff, because the last staff was able to get way more offensively out of this team than they're currently getting. So that's a cop-out. You know, the Philip Montgomery, Hugh Freeze experiment has been a complete disaster, right? So the hope that I have would be Hugh Freeze taking over this thing completely and showing us some level of what we saw him do with Malik Willis at Liberty and, you know, what he did at Ole Miss, which was really feels like eons ago now, right? You know, 2016, you know, was the year that, you know, Ole Miss let him go. That was so long ago. This is a different era of college football that we're playing in now. And he's got to find a way to modernize his offense and get something out of quarterbacks that have the type of talent that Robbie Ashford has. Look what LSU was able to do with Jaden Daniels year over year. He was nothing special last year, but they were able to take him in year two and make him into literally, he's going to make New York. He's going to be in New York for the Heisman ceremony.
To put it in perspective, a bleak perspective, Jaden Daniels has more passing yards for the season by a pretty significant number than Auburn's entire offense combined.
Yeah, by about 300 yards. And so it's going to be interesting to me to see if they can make that pivot offensively. There's going to have to be a scapegoat here. I don't expect Philip Montgomery to survive this. I don't. I think that if you're Freeze, accountability demands someone take the fall for this. And because he was trying to play more of the CEO role this year, it's going to be Philip Montgomery that falls on the sword here. And, you know, I expect him to be gone. And then Hugh Freeze needs to find somebody who can execute a vision of this offense. So the hope has to lie there. Changes on offense. Can they figure it out? And can they, in some ways, get out of their own way in terms of in-game decision-making?
Now, do you think, now I want to kind of rewind it back after we got to the hope question here, as far as expectations versus reality of this game for yourself, kind of how you thought folks would perform, rushing and receiving, and then defense, just if you kind of hit each of those three really quick.
You dropped out there for a second. You want me to hit?
Sorry, rushing, receiving, defense. How, like, for what you expected versus actually how they performed? Where was that for you for each of those groups?
I think defense has been a pleasant surprise. Right,
but I'm saying for LSU.
Oh yeah, it was right where I expected it to be. Because I expected them to get into the 40s. They came up with a turnover. Which they have done in every game so far this season. So that expectation was met. But I didn't have any delusions that they would get like 3 to 5 turnovers, but that's what they were going to need to win this game against this team on the road. So defense was about what I expected. This is a solid defense, but I think this is a very, 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 this is a top 5 offense in all of college football that they played on Saturday with a Heisman Trophy quarterback. So
in Death Valley on the road at night.
Oh yeah, man. Everything was set up for them to have a big game offensively. So defense was about what I expected. It wasn't good, but I still think this is a solid defense. The opponent just kind of overmatched them a little bit. On offense, this is about what I expected again, because I thought they would struggle to eclipse 20 points in this game. The coaching staff has not given us any indication that they will make a pivot similarly to what we saw Harsin do between Missouri and LSU last year, right? And going into LSU, they didn't win that game, but it looked a lot better offensively. They got the quarterback going, and it was just at the end of the game, LSU just had more dudes than Auburn, and that was the difference. That's about what I expected, from offense and defense. I think it was right what I expected. Now, I understand that wasn't a positive message, memes. This wasn't a popular message either. Mm-hmm. You and I got crucified for being negative and not being, real fans and all this stuff, because we were saying Auburn's going to get beat pretty badly in this one. But we were not delusional.
But the funny part is, though, if you say it the other way around, Then people come after you. Oh, you're sunshine pumping.
Yeah.
All right. For it. So it's a lose-lose situation, no matter how it is, unless you call a win and they actually win. But
exactly,
if you call the loss a bad loss, you get hammered for it. You call a bad loss a would-be win, then get hammered for that. So here we are on an island, taking rocks from all directions.
Yeah, hated to be right. As far as special teams was concerned, it was about what I expected. Not perfect, but we're not sitting here talking about special teams after the game. No particular play comes to mind. I think they put one kickoff out of bounds.
Chapman's 45 and a half average, still bombing the thing.
Yeah. It was about what I expected.
Nothing to say there. Now, as far as the moving forward picture, because I think the big story from this game really wasn't as much the game recap, what happened, as we said earlier, there's signs that this was there. The big story of this one is the fact that a lot of the problems that have plagued Auburn on the offensive side have still been there. And I'm kind of with you, the defense, this was a horrible matchup for them. And if they want to have one bad week, I can write that off.
Yeah.
With tackling and this and that. Yeah. I mean, this would be the team that could really pick you apart, but they have played well enough thus far in the season to where they can get a little pass, so long as it doesn't look like this against Ole Miss, because we'll say this, if it does, expect a score not too far off next weekend. What gets the ship steering right for Auburn? That's question one. And then two, at what point is there we cross the line of criticality of, oh no, we've got a problem?
I think that what gets the ship right here is nailing the personnel decisions. It starts with personnel and game plan. Put together a game plan that at least puts your kids in a position to compete. If you don't have that, with the talent level on this roster overall, then you don't really have a chance. And we'll be looking at, you know, possibly missing a bowl game. You can't get it together. So it starts there. You know, moving forward, I would say the next thing would be this staff's approach to motivation. How are they going to motivate these guys to believe that they can win going into a game? Hey guys, if we execute this, we can beat these guys, because no team is unbeatable. They were 7 points from beating, you know, from sending Georgia to overtime. They had a final drive, but ultimately there's got to be a belief there, because as a player, means if you can't close your eyes and envision yourself accomplishing what everybody thinks you can do, you definitely will not do it. The recruiting message to me has been very, very negative and counterproductive, borderline destructive to this team. Talking about recruiting and needing guys in season while you're coaching games, give me a break, man. That's amateur hour. Stop doing that. Right. It has not been received well by players. It has not been received well by parents. And it's starting to affect the way fans are feeling about this staff. Right. You know, not one time in 2007 did I hear Nick Saban say, even after LSU, we need to recruit dudes. Right. Like it wasn't a thing, man. You have to work with the players that you have. Find a way to get those guys better, because he touted being able to develop quarterbacks. And so far, not only the one you brought in, but the two we had on roster have not made any progression so far. I would argue that two maybe have regressed. So they've got to figure that piece out. And then lastly, you know, the approach to teaching, I think, has to improve. Whatever the approach here is to getting guys to absorb it, what it is you want them to do, they've got to find a way to send that message. He talks about this in pressers during the week. We got to coach it better. Well, you're 6 games in, man. Figure it out. So that is what they need to do moving forward to get Auburn back on the right track, to answer your question. You do those 3 things, and then maybe you have a chance to close the season out with 3 to 4 wins. You get 7 wins on the books. You have a respectable season, and you have a chance to either bolster this recruiting class or just hold it together.
Right. And this is the toughest part of the season. I mean, this season was going to be a 3-4-5 as far as difficulty, with those middle four being really, really tough. And of course you got Bama there at the end, which you can argue is it better than A&M, harder, you know, kind of where that sits as far as the hierarchy of ranking difficult to easiest opponents as far as your top half of the schedule. But for the most part, where Auburn is now kind of on the downhill slope of the difficulty for a while on the schedule here. Now, Ole Miss at home, this is a number 13 ranked Ole Miss. This is a good Ole Miss team coming in. I guess that could change with the AP, because we're saying this before that, but I digress. Top 15 Ole Miss team. This could be a get right game. Now, I think if you win this, I mean, the conversation, let's be real. I mean, winning cures a lot of problems, and that gives people very, very short term memory from where they were against this LSU game.
It'd be a 7-win team if you win this one.
I don't know if I'm feeling great about this win here, but it's at home. The talent, Ole Miss, they're performing well, but I mean, if you just look for talent, it's not like this is a massive gap like it has been the past few weeks versus Auburn versus opponent. Now, I think Lane Kiffin is definitely getting the most out of his guys, and I personally do not think that Hugh Freeze is getting the most out of personnel on this team, player for player. That can be an argument. People may not agree with me there. It's my opinion on it. But let's just say this one is another loss for Auburn. Mississippi State, which unfortunately the way it's playing out now, Auburn-Mississippi State could be similar to A&M last year, where that's playing for last in the West. And then you got to hope that, I mean, you're at Vanderbilt. That does not need to be a nail-biter game. And then I think that at Arkansas game, I think people would feel pretty confident if that one was at Auburn. Arkansas's been playing teams really close. It's at Fayetteville. You know, that's another kind of coin flip game. I think we had that in the toss-up column. Then they should have a get-right game against New Mexico State, and the Iron Bowl is just going to be the Iron Bowl. A tough slate here, and the crazy part about every single one of these games is every single outcome can have a completely different narrative for how folks feel about this season very, very quickly. My thinking on it is the patterns that Auburn has seen throughout the season don't give me a lot of confidence, because usually you just don't see offensive performance like this. Game seven, all of a sudden, just the light bulb goes off. It's, we fixed everything. And the patterns have been very, very reminiscent of the worst football seasons in Auburn history, not the good ones or the men ones. And I'm starting to kind of have a reminder from a quarterback situation of just from the divisiveness is 2011 when Barrett Trotter got yanked for Clint Mosley. And to serve everybody's memory, it wasn't the right move. And then Barrett Trotter came into the bowl game, lit it up, and everyone's like, well, maybe we'd got another win or two if we just let him ride it out and just slap it as a bad game for him. So that's just kind of goes to show just being just full objective. Sometimes yanking the quarterback for the next guy isn't always the right move, but I think we can say that Barrett Trotter is still doing better than Peyton.
Yeah, I
think we'd be happy to have Barrett Trotter right now.
You don't have questions as long as it feels like it's moving forward, even if that progress is slight. It just can't look objectively worse, and that's where it's at. So look, it's a hard decision to make. Listen, talent evaluation is not an exact science. I've said that over and over again. It's very difficult to project how a kid will do coming out of high school into the big leagues like the SEC. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to know what will translate from practice to game until you've got them in there. But ultimately, what you want to be able to do is you want to be able to have enough guys that you can afford to miss and go to the next guy. And I think that's what the upper echelon programs of college football have done very well. They've got enough dudes that if you have a five-star that busts, they've got the next five-star in line, and the chances of two of them busting in a row are not going to – are just very low. So what Auburn needs to do is, if you're not going to recruit on that level, you have to hit on the ones that you do get, right? Like, you have – to hit on your talent evaluations, and you got to figure out how to develop three stars into four and five star players. That's what you've got to do. Create a pipeline, have a system, have a process. And when you implement that process, it produces draft picks. Now, you know, can Hugh Freeze do that here at Auburn? You know, time will tell, but ultimately that's what the goal has to be. The goal has to be recruit and develop, right? And then whatever gap is still left after you've done the best job you can do, you close the rest of that gap with in-game decision making. Let's be real here. At the end of the 2013 Iron Bowl, Alabama should have thrown the Hail Mary to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, what happened?
I don't sound excited about that, but I always thought that too. I was kind of I was terrified of, like, they're gonna send a bomb to Mark Cooper, he's gonna catch it, it's gonna ruin just my entire year. And then they trot the field goal team out of there. It's like, how, news ever.
All these in game decisions when things are equal are what make the difference in the game. It wasn't talent, it was coaching decisions that made the difference in those games. And you know, sometimes bad decisions work out in your favor, and good decisions sometimes don't pan out. But ultimately, we saw it on Saturday with Oregon and Washington, right? Four decisions that Dan Lanning had in that game, and if he gets one of them right, they win.
I want to close it out with one scenario here, then I want you to kind of rate it and give me your opinion on it, that we will call it an episode. And once again, want to thank you for coming on tonight. Want to tell everybody out there, check out Mike, check out the War Report, and of course, Auburn Daily. So, as I was kind of mentioning the schedule and things moving forward, and kind of where the crossroads lie for Auburn. Got a night game at home against Ole Miss, a top 15 Ole Miss. This game, realistically, I think you're kind of crazy to say, even with the spread being within a touchdown as it stands right now. I think it's somewhere between 5 and 5.5 points. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. You look at that game and say, all right, you cannot have what happened against LSU, obviously. If you get blown out against Ole Miss like you did against LSU, big problems.
Right.
If you win, I mean, obviously, best case scenario. But we'll say realistically, you lose, but you lose within a touchdown. But I think even the bigger picture here, and I know we said this before the LSU game, but I think it's still going to remain true to Ole Miss. And I will say, if it doesn't get right in the next 2 weeks, there's a legitimate problem. Improve on the things that they've been struggling on. Now, going into LSU and Baton Rouge, that was a very tall order versus a lot of the mismatch there. I know a lot of people are, oh, well, the defense is so bad, this would be the chance. Yeah, there's a lot of validity to that. But you're at home. the next two games, and you got to get right against these two teams. If you lose to Ole Miss, keep it close, improve, and then keep rolling with that improvement momentum and actually show what you can do against Mississippi State. And then from there, I think you can salvage the season, get a good looking 6-6 or a solid looking 7-5. Then I think everybody turns the page of saying, okay, this is what we needed to get out of a rebuilding year. So that's a positive scenario. I would say the negative scenario is none of that stuff happens. You get the brakes blown off you of Ole Miss, and then you come sputtering against a Mississippi State team. And I'm not going to go into all the negatives there, but there can be a whole echelon of those. What are you thinking right here for the crossroads for kind of what this can mean for the rest of the season?
Well, in scenario one, right, I think you're absolutely right. Beating Ole Miss, it's not a must-win game. I had this as a toss. Auburn fans absolutely took me to task over it, and now everybody understands what I was saying by putting this in a toss column. This game was always going to be a tough one for Auburn. Again, you don't have to win it. I do not believe that they have enough offense to win this game, but if they can take some steps forward in terms of what they're – how they're producing offense and getting on the scoreboard, then that'll be a positive. Now, how can they take steps forward? You got to find a way to score more than 21 points in a Power 5 game. Auburn has not eclipsed a 21-point total yet in a Power 5 game halfway through the season. That's crazy. You've got to find a way to do that, you know, versus this team. They've had some games where they've given up some points this year, certainly. So not being able to do that would certainly be very, very disappointing, you know, in my book. The spread on this one, as you mentioned, is 6.5. The over-under is at 56.5. I think is nuts. I think that's too high. I'm probably not going to touch down off that in my book. But, ultimately, the scenario that you played out where you lose to Ole Miss, you absolutely positively have to beat this Mississippi State team. There is not they are just as bad as Auburn is offensively. Auburn has a much better defense. And then projecting the rest of the schedule, if you could beat Mississippi State, you get New Mexico State to get you 5 wins, and you beat Vanderbilt and you're there. If you're not going to score 21 points, right, 2 of the 3 games I just mentioned are going to be dogfights that you can lose. Right, one at home and one on the road. And yes, Vanderbilt will be a dogfight if you're not going to score 21 points.
They score just as many points on Georgia as Auburn did.
That's exactly where I was going with that. Right, like so. It's
scrappier Vandy team than, and it sucks. It seems like every time Auburn plays Vandy, it's like always in a. Mm-hmm. So you're above average Vandy teams. So.
Yeah. They're 0-4 in conference, but ultimately they put up 20 points, and they were the first to score in that game. Now, the game was never really in doubt for Georgia after the first quarter, but you get my point. You're in their house. If you're not going to score 21 points, you know, you're going to be struggling to beat Vandy in the fourth quarter. I think way too much weight was given into that almost win against Georgia, right? Like it hasn't come together yet.
Yeah. And I mean, I mentioned too, that even the 2012 game versus LSU, where Auburn kept them within 2. I think they played, it might have been LSU. They played some team in 08 really close. I might have been LSU too. I mean, so every bad Auburn team's going to have a game to where they, I mean, 2021 Auburn with Alabama. It's one of those deals where a team can always play another good team close. Because at the end of the day, I mean, Auburn is still within the blue chip ratio. They've got the guys on the roster to do it. It's just everything's got to, all the cylinders got to fire at the right time. And then every now and then, maybe you get 6 of the 8 fire and it looks really good. But until you get them all firing at the same time consistently, you're not going to consistently be in games. And that's kind of what we're seeing. And I'm under the belief that this isn't an issue of, hey, we've got a 4-cylinder engine. It's firing. It's not good enough. I think we're closer to the V8 engine. We just don't have everything rolling at the same time. Now, is it coaching? Is it this? Is it that to get there? That is going to be the ongoing debate for the rest of the season. Mike, do you have anything to conclude us with? I heard you.
I was going to say in the other scenario that you mentioned, you don't beat Mississippi State. If you lose 2 straight at home, the outlook for the rest of the season, I mean, this is where you start questioning whether Auburn can make a bowl game or not.
That's not the conversation you want to have at all.
This is, if you're not, again, every game minus New Mexico State is going to be a dogfight if you cannot get to 21 points total in a Power 5 game. I don't I just, you could lose all of those games. That is, believe it or not, that is the worst case scenario. Auburn wins zero SEC games this year. They could go 0-4 in the SEC. If you lose to Mississippi State, that is a real possibility. So they've got to figure that out, man, and figure out how not to be the bottom of the barrel, because they were much more competitive last year.
Because the problem there is the worst case scenario, and this is doomsday, obviously. We've already been over the best, but when you are there, you give your guys on your roster, do they start looking at the portal? Do other coaches start negatively recruiting against you, saying Hugh Freeze doesn't got it? He's not what he once was. That's not a place you want to be. It's a dumpster fire, kind of like you had against Harsin. Is that going to happen? Maybe, maybe not. But you don't want to. You don't even want to have it in the realm of possibility to give anybody those kind of headlines. And if you win your games and finish the season respectably, it's not a second thought. It's focused on rebuilding and going forward versus the foundation is just crumbled. There's nothing to even build there. So we're going to hope for the better case scenario in that equation. Auburn does what they need to do against Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and rolls that momentum for the rest of the season. I want to thank Mike G for jumping on the show tonight and giving us a good LSU recap and a little preview moving forward with kind of how things stand. Like I said, check him out on Twitter. Check out the War Report and everything they're doing. Mike, thanks again for coming on the show, and thank you for listening to the show.
Thanks, Beans. Thanks for having me.